Stand by for action.
Welcome to Dogsthorpe Infant School Launchpad.
This is your captain speaking. We've been cleared for departure.
Okay, Eddie, start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Let's go.
Part of the Hampton Academies Trust. It's the school where stars go to dream, believe and shine.
Yes, welcome back to Eddie's Launchpad. It's the Dogsthorpe Infant School podcast for parents, teachers and schools. It's another week, folks, and we've got another guest waiting for you. Well, spring has finally arrived. We're seeing signs of the seasons changing yet again. The long, dark winter evenings and nights are drawing to a close, and our daylight hours are growing longer with each passing day for the next 3 months. And there's a wonderful children's book that picks up on all of the smells of spring and our world as a whole. And to tell us all about it is our guest on Eddie's Launchpad today. His name is Julian Armistead. Welcome to the show, Julian.
Dave, it's a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about your book, please?
I think the book you're meaning is my picture book entitled Follow That Scent, which is a story about a small boy on a warm spring morning who kind of picks up a scent in his nose. He doesn't really know what it is. He doesn't know the word scent, but he picks it up anyway, and he becomes so interested in it, that fascinated by it, drawn to it, that he had been having an ice cream. He had been sucking on an ice cream, and he puts the ice cream in his pocket because he loses interest in the ice cream and becomes drawn by the scent instead and follows the scent. And the thing about the ice cream melting in his pocket is, of course, it attracts the attention of a wasp, and the wasp attracts the attention of a bird, and the bird, the cat, and so on and so forth. So you have this kind of formula progression of animals following each other, following the ice cream. But in fact, the boy is following the scent. And the story takes us through a kind of crisis where he follows the scent until the scent suddenly disappears, and all the animals come crashing into him until the scent reappears. And at the last moment, he's able to introduce all the animals to the scent. And they realize how much nicer the scent is than the things that they were following in the first place. So he kind of puts them in touch with the scent, which in a way you could say is the energy of the spring. You could say it's the energy of the boy's imagination. You know, it's a bit of a mystery what the scent is. But the last frame is that the animals, instead of following each other, follow the scent. And the boy actually withdraws because his mum comes to call him back. You know, where have you been? And the animals follow the scent, but instead of sort of following it in their normal way, they turn cartwheels to follow the scent. And that's the final image of the book, because, of course, what they're following is something that they'd never thought of ever following. It's something that kind of turns their lives inside out. And so I wanted also to kind of consider what the scent was, to ask the question about what puts people in touch with a kind of an excitement, a passion, something in their lives that really connects them with what they want to do and gives them the energy to turn cartwheels. It's a question I ask kids, actually, when I do workshops in schools. When would you, if you could, turn a cartwheel? You know, you come up with all these ideas and contexts in which people would be so happy or so energized to do this. So it's a kind of song for the spring. It's a real exploration of the energy of the spring.
And it's a wonderful, colourful book. The artwork in it is absolutely splendid, and it's as colourful as spring itself.
Thank you. Yeah, I was really lucky to have a brilliant artist called Sarah Hoyle, who came on board. And It's a really interesting kind of business when you're a writer and you do the story, you know, and your interest is primarily in words. But when you when you create a picture book, of course, you have to turn your attention towards the visual impact and the importance of that within the imagination of the book and how it works. And with the scent, there was a particular challenge about how you illustrate the scent, because it's not something like a horse or a cat or a dog or the boy, which has a sort of materiality to it. It's something that doesn't, by definition, is not material, you know. And you always want it to be more of a question than an actual answer. And she was brilliant because the way that she represents it is kind of, well, I'll leave it to your readers to determine how she's done it and what it says about the book. But that was a key aspect of illustration.
Teachers, grandparents, parents, here's a wonderful book, particularly at this time of year. We'll show you and explain to you how you can get hold of this wonderful story. And it is a very important theme, isn't it? Our smell is it can transport us. We can smell something. All you listeners, especially you children who listen, if we're taking Eddie out for a walk, we're not far from a factory that makes blueberry muffins. And if they're cooking those blueberry muffins, Eddie just stands there with his nose sticking right up in the air. And if we then have to pull him back because he wants to go and follow that scent, because he's thinking to himself, oh, I'd like to get hold of that. Well, it smells absolutely delightful. If you live in the area where we are, you will know exactly what we're talking about. But it's a scent can transport us. It's funny, isn't it, Julian, that every time I smell lavender, it transports me to a particular seaside resort, Margate, and Dreamland Fairground that used to smell of lavender. So now, whenever I smell lavender, it automatically transports me back to when I was a young boy walking around Dreamland theme park, as I guess it will be called now, it's an amusement park, walking around with the sun on my back, and I relive the day all over again. And I guess that's what you're trying to pick up on in this story, that smell can transport us and we forget about the ice lolly in our pocket.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, smell is one of the things I think where which triggers memory. We lay down memory with smell. I think there have been studies about this. You know, I remember I was a teacher for many years, and among the places I taught was in Hong Kong. And when I went out to Hong Kong, there was an identical smell to a childhood smell. I was brought up in West Africa, and it took me back to I was about 6 years old and smelling exactly, and it was a particular blossom, you know, that flourished in the same climate. It was quite extraordinary. I've never had that before.
Yeah.
And you're right about the dogs. I mean, we've had several dogs, and the one thing you notice about dogs is how hypersensitive they are. I mean, a scent to them is like seeing something multicolored. They can distinguish between so many, every kind of smell that we couldn't possibly smell, of course, thank goodness, because our lives would be very preoccupied as they are with dogs.
I read somewhere that they have 2,000 more receptors, scent receptors, than us. And I know that's true because the other day I often give Eddie we have like little treats. If he's been a really good boy, we've got lots of treats. So we have little cut up little pieces of sausage. And if he's a really good boy, we give him a piece of sausage. But I had this sausage, and he, for some reason, he walked off. And I thought, I'll put it in my pocket and I'll give it to him when we get into the lounge. And I completely forgot about this sausage. And it was later on, it was hours later, that he kept sitting on my lap, pawing at me. And I thought, what's the matter? And of course, he could smell this sausage. And I thought, oh, and I managed to get this piece of sausage. Yeah. And it was tiny piece of sausage. But he knew it was there. The scent. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's absolutely right. And the springtime is when I become aware of all these scents. I just love it. Maybe it's something to do. Actually, I was going to say it's something to do with getting older. You really value the seasons and when the light comes back and when, as you said in your introduction, you know, the snowdrops appear and the primroses and so on and so forth. But actually, when I was much younger, I used to be very attuned to the seasons as well. And maybe youth and older age have something in common there, because you know we kind of speak the same language. Mm. But the other thing about the scent is that I think it has to do not just with the literal scent that is such a joy in the spring, but also this idea of finding our passion, of locating the thing that really motivates us. And I think that's something that has always been with me. And I mean, I'm a parent of two kidults, you know, 28, 29, but they still have questions about what they really should be doing in life. And sometimes that title, Follow That Scent, becomes a sort of coaching question. You know, where is your scent? And it's something that is so self-evident. You know, no one has to know about the story to know that by the question, where is your scent, that there is something we know about ourselves that we kind of very easily, all too easily, lose contact with, particularly when we have other priorities, maybe around security, you know, or doing something sensible or something. We just lose touch with that absolutely essential life energy, which motivates us to do the things we do and to do difficult things as well. Because if you feel passionate about something, you'll make sacrifices and you'll do it with a certain amount of joy as well. So I think that's the deeper meaning for me of this story. The fact that the animals end up, you know, doing cartwheels is because they're gonna be willing to do difficult things because they've been put in touch with this energy. You know, the child has put them in touch with that energy, and it's the child in us that puts us in touch with the things that we know that we love doing, whether it's teaching, playing football, blowing a trumpet, dancing, whatever it is. These are things that the child in us really understands better than the adult, I think. So it's being put in touch with our inner child as well. Mm. So that's one for the adults there.
Yeah, absolutely. Scent and the smell, the sense of smell is such a driving force that, you know, and it can drive us. It can inspire us and drive us in much the same way that all of our senses can. I've only got to smell a fish and chip shop and I've got to get there. Yeah. But that's more about me. But you know, that can be a driving force. But also, you know, that whole thing about how animals, creatures, are driven by scent into a whole new joy and a whole new season. It's a wonderful book. And all you grandparents, if you want to get a little taster, there are YouTube videos giving you little snippets of this, because you've got little videos out there as well, haven't you, Julian?
Yeah. I was very lucky. I worked with a fantastic producer who lives locally, who works with all sorts of musicians, and Follow That Scent, we managed to sort of animate the picture book and turn it into a little film, and it's got a wonderful clarinet accompaniment, which I love. And again, it's as you said, it's freely available on YouTube, and I think it kind of gives a, in a way, a different retelling of the story, because of the power of the music and the animation.
And it reminded me a bit about Sparky's Magic Piano type of feel, sense to it, or you know, those type of videos, the Oliver Postgate, on all of those sorts of films. And it is a wonderful way of inspiring people to then delve into the book. And do, folks, get hold of the book. Don't just leave it with the video. Don't stick your child down. There's too many of this, sticking your child in front of a tablet and letting them watch videos. Getting into the written word. Reading is so important, isn't it, Julian?
Yeah, I love writing children's books, because I think there's also a kind of poetry about it. And by poetry, I don't mean anything precious. I'm not a poet, but there is a precision about words. I mean, you really have to pare them down. There's a certain amount of rhyme scheme, a lot of alliteration. There are things that I think will bring pleasure to a reader of the book, whether it's a parent or a grandparent reading to the child, or the child reading to themselves, or reading to each other. I really enjoy language. My other vocation as a writer is a playwright, and there's a certain sort of poetry about playwriting, when you're trying to represent the voices of people. And the other thing about the book, of course, is the illustrations. I mean, I really can't emphasize enough how lucky I was to get Sarah Hoyle, because she's absolutely brilliant. And so even with the child who perhaps struggles with language somewhat, the illustrations will help them. And the illustrations really are a delight, of course, because there are these lovely animals, and also a rider on top of a horse, who I haven't mentioned. But anyway, you'll find out what her role is. But she's rather the severe adult who's about to tell the boy off.
Yeah.
Until she's put in touch with the scent and she realizes what it is that's been driving him. And
That's what I love about the books, that particularly the books that you write and the authors that we feature on our show. Our children come in having had the books that very young infants have, and it's very good that they've got them. You know, the ones where John is waiting for the red bus. That's a green bus. No, that's a blue bus. And that, with the pictures, and it's very, very simple. But I can quite understand why those books are written. It's all about encouraging children to delve into books. But then we move on to the narrative stuff, the story stuff. And I suppose the books that we feature in Dogsthorpe Infant School are the ones where the children first delve into the story in a much deeper way, and they follow a character through, and so much so with your book and the characters involved, and not all of them are in the book. I don't want to spoil the story, but you'll find them, children, that you'll delve into a storybook, as in with this one, and you find someone, you think, oh, I don't really like her. But then afterwards, you then follow that character through and you find out a little bit more about them. I mean, it makes the book. That's the wonderful thing about your book, Julian, as well, about the narrative and the story. Teachers, do check this out. There'll be a link in the podcast. Go and have a look and you can find out how you can get hold of the book. Have you written any other books, Julian?
Yes. In my children's selection, the other book that I'm promoting at the moment is a book called The Runaway Clothes, which is a very different kind of story in a way. It's a bit more zany. It's about some clothes who, as the title suggests, run away from their owner, and their owner is a rather careless owner called McFogarty, who has cast them aside on a hot summer afternoon in his rush to get down the hillside into a stream where he's going to swim and cool himself down. And so that the story really is about the clothes as they've been cast aside on this sort of along this path down the hill, and starting with the shoes and then the socks, they pick themselves up and wonder why they've been doing all their lives, you know, being treated in this way by McFogarty. And so they gradually assemble and combine, and the shoes and the socks and then the trousers, and as they start to walk, they become more aware of what their possibilities might be. But of course, before they can do anything, they have to confront McFogarty, who is down there in the stream. And of course, the crisis of the book is when McFogarty sees them, you know, walking along, and assumes that someone is stealing his clothes. And so there has to be that kind of confrontation where the clothes decide that actually they're not going to just go meekly and go back to a careless owner. They're actually going to have to confront this very, very difficult thing, which is saying, no, we actually want to live life on our terms. And once they've done that, they're in a position to enjoy freedom, enjoy a life, be fully realized as the runaway clothes. So it's a kind of story which on one level is zany and surreal, but it's also on another level a story about combining and having the courage of your convictions and realizing what you need to be and what you need to do in order to flourish, which is to confront your fears sometimes, to seek friendships and alliances, which will help you to do that, to be brave and to be independent. I would say
it sounds like that you've got a very important message in that book as well as your other book. It's good to hear.
Well, these messages don't necessarily come before you write them. In fact, they don't. It would be a bit too schematic. The messages, the stories tell themselves, I think, because the stories assemble. It's like the clothes. I think that, you know, the clothes, the shoes getting together with the socks and the trousers gradually, is very much like the process in which a story assembles itself in your mind. You know, and suddenly it's just a few silly things coming together until you realize actually it is a story, it is a narrative. And then you go with it as far as it'll take you. And then at that point, perhaps you start shaping it and thinking more deliberately about what the story is about. But the ultimate message of a story, I think, only comes to you perhaps years after you've told the story and published the story. Mm. I mean, there was another aspect to the story, which I only realized the other day, which is really more of an adult or a theme for adults, which is how certain situations or jobs can end up owning you. And yeah, you don't want to be owned, you know. I mean, you know, you're a teacher. I've been a teacher. I love teaching kids. But sometimes, let's face it, the job can end up owning you. Whereas you go into teaching wanting to inspire, wanting to make a difference, but it ends up being the marking and the this and the that. And of course, there are countless other occupations. All occupations are capable of doing that to us. And you know, we that's not the reason we went into them in the first place. So you have to take stock. And I think that's perhaps what was in my deeper psyche as I was writing this memory of being owned rather than owning. So that's another aspect of the story, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like to me that as the older I get, the more I realise that the more allegoric the stories are that we read, the more you get out of them. That you, it's only later you have, yeah, like this slow fuse. You think, right, it's not just a, yeah, it's not just a book about the fight against good and evil. It's actually telling us something about ourselves and about our identity, yeah, or definitely about the world or about pollution. And yeah, you know, it's only later you have that slow burn and you suddenly realise something that deep within the text is something else. That's the, yeah, joy of books. And those of us that take time out to read, there's a whole world out there. So children, yeah, get into those books.
Also, definitely. I think children's stories also equip us to be adults. There's been quite a lot of work on this, that the importance of stories, not just in terms of literacy and so on and so forth, but actually it gives us a wisdom about how to deal in the world. And we're not aware, perhaps, of the way in which we're shaped by stories, but we are.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, fairy tales, of course, are a case in point, how they help us to entertain our fears while giving us a sort of solution to addressing them. I love one of my favorite stories is Going on a Bear Hunt by Michael Rosen. Of course, that's such a good example of this, you know, how you can't go over it, you can't go under it, you have to go through it, which, yeah, is such an adult theme in a way, isn't it?
Yeah,
because we,
yeah,
we always come across difficult situations, and mm, and it's that repetition of that. It's a sort of reassurance, but also just, well, that's the way life is. Is there a situation you just have to go through, but it will be okay,
yeah,
because you will get through it.
So you mentioned the fact that you go into schools. So yeah, what other things do you do as in between your time of writing these wonderful books?
Well, what do I do? Well, I'm a playwright, and that that's a job that is quite solitary and it leads to a lot of false trails because it takes a long time to write a play, and lots of ideas that you have and you take time over never get anywhere. So I like to mix it up, really, and children's stories are a different kind, as I said, a different kind of poetry, a different kind of thing to do with words, but it's also part of the same process, and so that keeps me busy. I'm also a church warden in my wife's a vicar, right. And so that keeps me very busy. It's a entirely unpaid caretaker role, so I'm looking after a building and also a churchyard, and so, and sometimes the vicar as well.
It's a big responsibility to be a church warden, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, a lot of responsibility there. Regarding the second book that you mentioned,
yeah.
Do you want to give us the title again? And also, is it illustrated in exactly the same way as the Follow That Scent?
It's illustrated in a different. It's illustrated with watercolors.
Right.
It's very beautifully illustrated, but with watercolors, so it's quite distinctive. Some people say it's a bit like Quentin Blake. If you like Quentin Blake, you probably warm to this one. The illustrator, my illustrator on that was someone called Soham Day. I think he's another genius. He and I wanted to work with him for years and years and years, and I was very lucky eventually that he had some time to devote to my book. And there's also a film of the Runaway Clothes,
right.
Set to different instruments. Actually, it's quite jazzy, and I think your listeners will enjoy it. Again, you can find that on my website, or it's just out on the web. Just Google The Runaway Clothes by Julian Armitstead, and you'll find it. And that'll give you a sense of what the story's about.
Brilliant. Now, if people want to get hold of the books, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, I would always say my website, because that's the most direct way of buying them. That they are available through Waterstones and through mainline bookshops. Whether they have them in stock, you would just order them through the bookshop. But by far the best way is to find julianarmitstead.com, go to my shop and buy it, and I will send it out first class.
Well, there we are, folks. Go on to the podcast text. You'll find the link. You're just one click away from Julian and his wonderful books. If you're a teacher or and you've got your own class thinking about getting a new book in, something for the reading corner, if you're a grandparent thinking of what am I going to buy my grandchild for their birthday or something, here is a wonderful book, and you can sit on a sofa, and if they can't read yet, you can read it to them, and if they can read, you can encourage them to read it. It is a wonderful story, and I look forward to having Julian back on the show when he gets his next book out. Julian, thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
And so another great episode is coming to an end. Thank you all for listening. Captain Dave and Eddie will be back again next week for another learning journey on the Dogsthorpe Infant School Launchpad. To dream, believe, and shine.
Part of the Hampton Academies Trust. It's the school where stars go to dream, believe, and shine.